It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Coming up on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, a look at voting, citizenship, reparations, some of the most divisive issues out there. And to better understand it, you need to understand constitutional amendments after the Civil War. Terry will talk with historian Eric Foner about his book, The Second Founding, How the Civil War and Reconstruction Remade the Constitution. Eric Foner, one of the giants of American historical research, with Terry Gross, coming up here on 89.3 KPCC. In case you joined us on the later side today, with the passing of Cokie Roberts, the wonderful NPR journalist who died this morning at the age of 75, on our Air Talk segment page for the opening of today's show, we're giving you a chance to pay tribute to Cokie. So please take an opportunity to write your thoughts on our Air Talk page, kpcc.org, the one for the segment about Cokie, just to share your memories of one of the founding mothers of NPR, Cokie Roberts. Over the years of hosting Air Talk, one of the topics most frequently suggested to me by listeners is how judges award alimony, or spousal support, as it's called under the law. Those paying support often complain that their exes are happy to collect the checks for years afterwards, even if they're fully capable of supporting themselves. One disgruntled alimony payer, Steve Clark of Huntington Beach, is gathering signatures in hopes of putting a spousal support reform initiative in front of voters. He's calling for a five-year limit on alimony. Clark is paying, according to his account, $1,000 a month to his ex in perpetuity. Well, Clark has a big uphill task. He has to get more than 600,000 signatures, so by no means an easy task for him. But this gives us a good opportunity to look at California's spousal support guidelines and to hear from listeners whether you feel that they are appropriate or not. We're at 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5722. If you could change California's spousal support laws, in what way would you do it? Or if you think the law gets it right, I'd love to hear your defense of the way California judge handle spousal support. 866-893-KPCC or the Air Talk page, kpcc.org. Joining me is Atusa Sai, who's a family law specialist based in Santa Monica. Atusa, good to have you with us again on Air Talk.
Thank you, Larry.
Let's start with how judges determine spousal support. Just generally, what are the factors they look at?
Sure. So first of all, there's temporary spousal support, which is right, you know, after the separation. And it's to essentially maintain some status quo and keep a roof over everybody's heads until you get to the final orders. When you get to the final orders, the factors used are different. So at the beginning stages, the courts can use what's called guideline, but they're not required to. And what guideline support is we have this computer program called a DisoMaster. And based on the evidence before the court, numbers get plugged into a software program and a number gets spit out. There's arguments that could be made against guideline and for the court to deviate from it. But as a rule of thumb, if you're an experienced attorney and you're trying to settle the matter without going to court, both counsel will say, hey, let's just run guideline based on what we know these parties' incomes are. Then when you get to the permanent support, the court is not allowed to use guideline and the DisoMaster, and the court is to look at very specific factors. And those factors include the length of the marriage, the health of the parties, if there was any domestic violence during the marriage, and the standard of living. There's other factors as well, but those are some of the big ones. The standard of living during the marriage is a big one as well, because what it can do is it can cap the alimony. So let's say you were married for 11 years and the most the payor spouse made was $500,000. And in 8 years, he's making $1 million or she's making $1 million. Then the court can say, look, you never had this during the marriage. I'm capping it. A lot goes into it. It's not very cut and dry. But for as a rule of thumb, we start with the guideline that gives us a good idea.
If the payor of spousal support is unhappy with the judge's the permanent order of support, is that appealable?
Sure. So alimony is always modifiable, as is child support, but we're not talking about child support today. But alimony is always modifiable unless the parties stipulate in a settlement agreement outside the court that it's going to be non-modifiable. And that's kind of some fancy footwork that attorneys will come up with. But otherwise, it's always modifiable. And so if it's over 10 years, the court will retain jurisdiction over the issue. And if it's under 10 years, there's usually a termination date, which is about half the length of the marriage. But if the payor loses his or her job, they can go back in and say, I no longer have employment. If the payor says to the court, look, she or he has had plenty of time to get a job, they haven't. We need to start imputing this person with income. They can modify it based on that. Or the person receiving the alimony gets a job and they start earning money. That as well could be a basis to modify. There's other basis. Let's say you receive an inheritance and all of a sudden you're sitting on millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars that you didn't have before. The payor can go in based on that and say, we need to modify this. This person has more in assets than I do at this point.
Yeah, why should I be continuing to pay the person in perpetuity? All right. Again, I'd love to hear from you if you're someone who either pays spousal support or is the recipient of spousal support. What, if anything, would you change about the process or the numbers as they come down in spousal support? Or if you feel like the system works surprisingly well, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that, too, at 866-893-KPECC. There's a chance for all of those of you to pull me aside in public and say, you need to talk about this topic. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Also with me is attorney Zephyr Hill, San Diego-based attorney, practices family law. Zephyr, thank you very much for being with us. What would you modify about spousal support if you could?
Oh, interesting. You know, I mean, the tact that our friend in Huntington Beach has put us on would be very good for my clients. you know, so I would say we more often than not are representing the breadwinners and the payors of the spousal support. So to have an end date on a lengthy marriage would be a great benefit to my clients. You know, otherwise, it's at the discretion of the court. And so you can get good results and bad results. It'd be difficult to say that there's something inherently wrong or right with the current system, given that it's kind of up to the particular judge to determine, at least as Attorney Atusa pointed out, when it comes to the permanent determination, and you're not using the guideline anymore.
Do you feel like that is too much latitude for judges, or just are there so many moving parts in dissolving a marriage that it has to be left in the judge's hands?
Yeah, I think it's easy to sit on the sidelines and want something more simple or more objective or predictable, but then you've got all these, you know, people's lives that are all different, and so you want some discretion and you want some ability to argue the facts or to interpret the situation and do what's right in that specific instance. You know, so I like that there's some discretion there to look at the standard of living during the marriage and how they lived and how they spent and how they saved. I think that's all very relevant to the determination.
Do you feel that judges, in most cases, do a good job of assessing the recipient's ability to get a job, the person's employability, and factor that in?
Well, I might be biased in this, but but that's definitely a scenario that I feel maybe they're a little too soft on the supported spouse. You know, that person doesn't really always have to put their best foot forward in terms of getting education or working harder or taking on more hours if they're part-time or whatnot. You see a lot of lenience on that end, and I think that hurts the payor more often than not. The other thing that we've got to mention is kind of this bright-line rule at 10 years, where you go from, okay, we've got an 8-year marriage and I'm going to owe for half the length of the marriage, I'm going to owe for 4 years. But as soon as we get to 10 years, there's this magical potion that comes into play where all of a sudden I owe, like you've said, in perpetuity. Now, presumably at some point I can get out of it, but I've got to go fight for it now. I've got to go back to court and I've got to say, hey, I think it's been long enough. I don't think he or she needs the support anymore. I can't afford to pay it anymore. And that puts a lot of pressure on somebody who's struggling in their marriage at 9 and a half years. And I'm sitting in a consultation with somebody and saying, geez, if you're going to do it, you know, do it now. And that's not really what the state wants. We don't want to have that kind of pressure that would encourage people to get divorced. But that is definitely the impact that it has.
Yeah, I have to say, for my first marriage, we made sure to file before 10 years. So retirement plans, all that stuff didn't, you know, end up complicating the dissolution of our marriage. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. And in fact, I was eligible for spousal support because I was starting in radio and made next to nothing. And my wife was very highly paid, working in the entertainment industry. It would have been absurd. Here she was doing a favor by supporting us to get me started in my career, for which, you know, I owed her big time for her doing that. And then turn around and have her pay spousal support. That would have been pretty cold-blooded on my part. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Let's talk with Evan in West Adams District. You're on AirTalk.
Hi. So I would definitely be in favor of restrictions for this. My parents were divorced when I was a lot younger, and my mother secretly remarried without disclosing that information to the rest of the family, and was married for about 4 years before anyone caught on. And so she was receiving spousal support from my father, even though she was now married to somebody else who had, in this case, a considerable amount of wealth as well.
Yeah, Evan, thank you. Zephyr Hill, do you run across that very often, secret marriages to avoid losing spousal support?
I would say that's on the unusual side. It happens, obviously. What happens more often is somebody just chooses not to get married. You know, if you've got $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 coming in each month, that's quite a pay cut to get married. And even the new boyfriend or new girlfriend that you're cohabitating with or in a serious relationship with, they understand the value of that money coming in as well. So it really puts people in an interesting position there.
Evan, thanks for your call. And when we continue, USC law professor Scott Altman will talk with us about the state of the law for spousal support. And we'll hear his thoughts if there's anything he would do to reform it or thinks we have a pretty good balanced system for handling both parties when a marriage dissolves. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Back in 1 minute. Spousal support in California. Does it need reform? An initiative is gathering signatures that would set a limit for 5 years eligibility for spousal support. But we're not just talking about that particular proposal. We're asking if you could change the way spousal support is awarded, in what way would you do it? Or do you feel like the law does a pretty good job of balancing both parties' interests at the end of a marriage? 866-893-KPECC. Tanya in San Clemente says, often it is the woman left with the responsibility of the children, and that's why they often have gaps in their careers or haven't been able to develop a career at all. I think that's important to consider. And Christina Pasadena says, I don't like it being called spousal support as the two are no longer spouses. I think it's psychologically damaging for future relationships when, after the marriage dissolves, you're calling it spousal support. 866-893-KPECC. USC law professor and family law specialist Scott Altman joins us. Professor, thank you so much for being with us. You feel like the status quo pretty much gets it right?
As both of your speakers have said, the status quo is very much a discretionary system. Judges are told you have 12 or 14 different factors you got to think about. As long as you've thought carefully about these factors, we'll trust that whatever you do is sensible. And it just seems inevitable in a system with that much discretion that from time to time people are going to be unhappy with outcomes and judges might make mistakes, and they're not always that easy to correct. On the other hand, as Zephyr in particular said, cases are so varied that it's hard to imagine a system that we would be happy with that didn't involve some discretion. What I really think would most improve the system is if these 14 factors were put in an order so that judges are told by the legislature which of these things is most important and what ought to dominate their thinking. And one thing in particular that I think is important is in the long-term marriages where you're more likely to have a spousal support order and it's likely to go on for more than a few years, to ask why one of the spouses has better marketable skills than others. In some cases, both spouses work throughout the marriage. One just had a higher income than the other, and it's because they had better skills or had gone to school longer or chose a more lucrative career. And we might think very differently about those kinds of cases than the ones that your listener was mentioning, where one of the spouses stayed out of the workforce to care for children, was out of the workforce for 10 or 12 or 15 years in a long marriage. It's harder to see in a long marriage how they can catch up, and it's also less equitable to say, well, you've made all these sacrifices for the benefit of the family that deprived you of your earning capacity. We think you should just be thrown back to the job market, which might not be very inviting. So I wish that the judges were directed to ask more pointedly, why does the recipient lack the job market skills, and to prefer to give longer awards when the reason is being out of the job market to care for children.
Is California's framework for spousal support similar to other states, or is there wide variety in spousal support laws across the country?
The vast majority of states do exactly what California does. They give a long list of factors. They tend to be very similar. The standard of living in the marriage, the marketable skills, the ability to re-educate to get better skills, age and health and domestic violence. And California includes what I wanted, the reason why your marketable skills have been reduced, but it's just not given prominence. There are a few states that have experimented with making guideline support the basis for long-term awards in much the way that we do with child support. It's very much a mathematical formula, but mostly people have been dissatisfied with the mathematical approach.
Let me go back to Atusa Sai, Santa Monica-based family law specialist. When you have an appeal of an award for alimony, does that go back before the same judge who set the permanent spousal support, or do you get to present to another judge when you ask for a reconsideration?
So I think what you're talking about are two different things. So one is a motion for reconsideration, and that would go back in front of the same judge. And that's going to be based on new evidence that wasn't available at the time of the hearing. And that's going to go in front of the same judge. And most, like 9 out of 10 times, you're not going to get anywhere with it.
Really?
Right, because it's the same judge. So that judge is going to have to come forward.
Even
and
with
say,
new information, all right.
The judge, it has to be new information that existed at the time of the hearing that you were unable to present. And so the judges will likely say to you, look, you know, I'm not changing my order, but you can file another motion. Because that's the thing. You're free to file as many motions as you want to continue trying to modify your alimony. People don't do it left and right. Because it's costly. And at some point, if the other side has an attorney and you keep losing, you're going to get hit with their attorney's fees. Now, an appeal is different. If you do an appeal, it'll be limited to the hearing itself and the evidence that was presented. And it's discretionary in front of the court. And so that'll be in front of another judge. But again, getting family law orders appealed and changed are quite difficult because there's so much discretion before the family law judges. So there has to be certainly error that was so prejudicial and so wrong on the judge's part that the appeal would work. In alimony situations, most likely you're stuck with the order, but your remedy is to simply file another motion.
Now, if there's a prenuptial agreement between the couple, are those pretty solid? Do those typically hold up when the marriage dissolves?
So the answer to that is yes and no. It depends on how well it was drafted. It depends if you had an attorney that knew how to draft a proper prenuptial agreement, if both sides were represented by counsel, if the disclosures were proper and accurate. I've seen some that are wonderful, and I've seen some that are horrible on their face, which wouldn't have a chance of holding up in court. The one thing that's important to keep in mind about alimony in the context of prenuptial agreements is that if it is unconscionable, this is the law, this is the current law, if it is unconscionable at the time of enforcement, the court can deviate. So let's say you guys get married, you're going to get married and everyone's in great health and you get a prenup that says no alimony. At the time of divorce, somebody's disabled. Court's going to say, it worked then, it's not working now.
Wow, interesting. Discretion, so many ways. I appreciate it. Thank you, Atoussa, for being with us.
Of course.
Atoussa Sy, attorney based in Santa Monica, family law specialist. My thanks to Zephyr Hill, managing attorney for San Diego-based law firm Goldberg Jones, and Scott Altman, USC law professor who specializes in family law. You can share your comments on the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Thank you so much for being part of our program today. Fresh Air with Terry Gross is next. Historian Eric Foner with Terry for his brand new book. Back with you tomorrow morning at 10 for the next Air Talk.